This is Vince McCauley.
This is Coach Creon of the Surrey Scorchers.
This is Scott Melvin, CEO and co-founder of Buzz 16.
This is Rodney Glasgow for the Sheffield Sharks.
This is Kennedy Leonard from the London Lions.
And you're now listening.
And you're listening.
And you're listening.
And you're listening.
To the BBL show.
To the BBL show.
To the BBL show.
To the BBL show.
Enjoy the BBL show.
For 19 second chance points, 50 points in the paint, it was the perfect Glasgow Rocks display, and they have overturned a 7-point defeat to win comfortably in the end here in the second leg. And Gareth Murray and the Glasgow Rocks, who a couple of months ago didn't even look like they were going to make the playoffs, are into the semi-finals.
Thanks, Dan. JC, it takes a lot of mental fortitude over the course of 80 minutes to win in this league, specifically in the playoffs. How did the Glasgow Rocks defeat the odds?
We just came out, we did what we're accustomed to doing. You know, we try to play at our pace. You know, and we knew this was a must-win game for us. It was either that or start packing. So we just came out, we played extremely hard. You know, we gave a lot of effort. You know, guys made shots. You know, we just did what we had to do as a team, you know, trying to move on, trying to keep competing.
Okay, the Rocks are through and absolutely saved my butt and kept me in the game, Drew Lasker.
I'm disappointed, man, because I thought that I had this thing sealed up, signed, delivered. And who would have known a month ago the Glasgow Rocks are through to the semifinals. Amazing. Unbelievable.
Man, absolutely killer. This is episode 34 of the BBO show. I am Jay Marriott. He is Drew Lasker. First weekend of playoffs, and we felt that we needed that energy and enthusiasm as we looked to the dictionary. It gave us only one name, fellow Janner and Sky Sports commentator for the BBL. Welcome back.
Yes, sir.
Big Tony Rowe.
Evening, fellas. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you, man. I felt like I was just working with you like a couple of hours ago, but, you know, maybe I'm having a little bit of a groundhog day.
It's a strange dynamic. We're like colleagues, you know, on a Friday night or a Sky Sports setup, but then I'm a fanboy the rest of the week because I'm like the biggest fan of the BBO show. So I'm like a privilege to be here, boys.
Oh, mate. Well, we are absolutely looking forward to your input. But before that, let's get into your social media spy. It's the Marriott Minute. Okay, let's start with our man Tuck recording 500 appearances for the Sheffield Sharks Basketball Club. Captain Mike Tuck continues the Peter Pan act in Yorkshire. And when I've wrapped this up, I will ask Anthony Rowe if he remembers our very first conversation about Mike Tuck joining the league, which was awesome, yeah? It's all the goodbyes, early exits, being forgotten faces of stars that could have been. But as Highlander says, there can be only one. Antonio Boo-Man Williams said thank you to the Plymouth City Patriots and supporters for a great second half of the season. He said he wouldn't do it with no other team. Rodney Glasgow Jr., Drew's man who felt that they could have gone all the way, said hunger and pain, gone build a different beast. And then Gino Artisan Jr. of the Manchester Giants said tough way to end the season, but we left it all out there and proud of the guys. It's rumoured after all the hard work the Glasgow Rocks have done, they may have to play their home tie somewhere else with problems securing the dates to make it happen. Probably a badminton booking. See how many get that reference. And to leave with the ultimate playoff vibe, I'm going to end with a quote from Bristol Flyers star man Mike Miller. Let's send them boys home. And that's this week's playoff Marriott Minute. I'm always watching.
And boy, did he send them home. And we'll touch on Bristol a little bit later. But let's start off with the Sky Sports matchup. Sheffield Sharks hosting the Rocks. Sheffield coming into tonight's game with a 7-point lead. And the Rocks put all those narratives to bed that they can't win on the road and get the job done. One of the best defensive leagues in the team. They put up 90-plus points. And now they just got to find somewhere to play, like you mentioned, Jay. But, Ann, I want to come to you first. Please tell me you saw this coming. I mean, you got everything else right. You caught on the early season predictions. You are the GOAT. You're the guy. You got everything spot on. So tell us that you did envision the Glasgow Rocks making it to the semifinals.
Full disclosure, I had no clue. I even sat there, was it 5-6 hours ago? I said, guys, what's going to happen today? I had no clue. And I think you take a look back at the first leg, and you know, they've already had the sprinkle of bad luck. You know, Antoine Johnson goes down, the hottest player in the BBL, and he goes down, and then happens to Rodney Glasgow, closing minutes of the second quarter. And one that happened too, it was just a 2-point game. So in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, this is it. The Sharks are done. And they end up leaving that Emirates Arena with a 7-point lead. So that little, I think, you know, when you say consistently, you know, resilient, that is the Sheffield Sharks this year. So going into today, I thought, okay, maybe they've got to, they find something else, something else to give them another life. And but the Rocks, they were just something else today. So no, I did not know what was going to happen before tip off. I had no clue. Even when the game started, the pace of the game was so fast. So yeah, it was tough to call.
Well, I appreciate your honesty, my friend. Jay, you say Sheffield Sharks are the most consistent team in the league. At being consistent, so what happened tonight?
I think there was two things that happened tonight. So I think one, they ran out on their luck of not having their players. You know, like Atiba said at the end of the game, he had Kipper Nichols bringing the ball up, and that was really throwing out the rhythm of their offense. You know, consistently, you said it, Drew, coming into this playoffs, you know, defense usually wins out in these playoffs, and they're certainly that team. That's what they bring. That's what that energy. But you got to have talent at the other end of the floor, and I think they just ran out of a little bit of gas. And then if you look at Glasgow, I'll be honest with you, like, even though I called them going through, like, I was a little bit worried that they lost at home. But like we've been asking for all year, and I said it, I think, about a month ago, at some point, all three of those stars are going to come to the table and they're going to put a game in. And that's exactly what happened. Their three stars turned up, absolutely balled out. Gareth played it really, really well. He felt like that they would run out of legs and they didn't have the offense to keep up. And the gamble paid off.
Yeah, the gamble did pay off. And I would just like to say, because I said on the top of the show that the Glasgow Rocks needed to score 80, and Kieran Achara said 85. And if Glasgow had scored 80, they would have won by 1 point tonight. So another interesting question that Nat asked Kieran tonight was, in particular for defense, or the lack of defense with the Glasgow Rocks, is it philosophy? Is it personnel? And what's your thoughts on that? Because all of a sudden, we've been talking about the lack of defense from Glasgow Rocks, but tonight they really brought it on that side of the ball. So what exactly is it? What's the recipe that's required for a good defensive team?
I think there's a combination of a few things. I think firstly, it's culture, and I think the way the team is set out, they're set out to score the ball. Okay, there's no accident why they're averaging 89 points a game or 90 points a game. It's because of the way they play. Now, you have to give up something. It's all good and well, the coach saying, look, we have to be really good on offense and really good on defense. If you do that, you beat the Leicester Riders, right? You win every game by 20. So it's not realistic to have those goals set. So I think they're just positioned, they're positioned to be more offensive. And I do wonder as well, when they're watching videotape and they see multiple breakdowns on defense, is there accountability? Is the coach singling out that individual? That is not acceptable. That is not acceptable. Because the teams I played on at the Riders, that was not acceptable. And you were told on the Monday that was not acceptable. So I think the first point is culture, and I think that's accountability as well, and that's top down, that's coach and staff down to the players. And then, like I said, the strategy of the team, you can't do it all. You do it all, you win every game by 20. So it's not a realistic expectation. So I think it's a combination of those two things. And the more and more a season goes on as well, just like with winners and losers, you start to believe in that, right? You know, it's a consistent pattern. You know, I'm giving up 90 points again. Oh, we do it again next Saturday. We do it again next Friday. You start to sort of accept and believe that that's the type of team you are. So I think that comes into play as well. So, you know, the answer to your question, there's a lot of different things. And I think each of those things the Glasgow Rocks have adopted this year, and that's why they're the worst defensive team in the league.
Yeah, great point. And Dave Forrest and I was texting back and forth pretty much all weekend, because I reminded him before this return leg in Sheffield that once upon a time in 2011, my Newcastle Eagles were up by 7 points and we returned to the second leg and Sheffield overturned it and knocked us out the semifinals or quarterfinals, can't remember. And it's kind of poetic justice that the Sharks with a 7-point lead gets knocked out as well. But So before we move on from these two teams, Jay, Sheffield Sharks last year up by 14 with 7 minutes to go, losing the first round. Losing the first round this year after being up 7 after the first leg. Is this a successful or disappointing season for the Sheffield Sharks?
I think for them as an organization to finish second is like a massive achievement. You know, you pointed it out last week when you're talking about the finances of the London Lions and you're actually managing to finish second behind Leicester Riders, not London Lions, then you've got to say that you've had a successful season. Every single year they're looking for that elusive trophy. You know, they're always there or thereabouts for one trophy at least. Like I said, they can be dangerous in a cup. But I think there'll also be a small part of them that feel like this opportunity got away from them, because I just can't see the teams that have slipped this year, I can't see them making those slips again. So surely London are going to go under a massive review and some infrastructure is going to go in there that's really going to change things. You best believe that Paul Blake is not going to be sat there allowing the Newcastle Eagles to sit outside of the playoffs. So you have to imagine they're going to come back stronger. You know, and what would the Giants do? You know, nobody saw them signing Dan Clark last year. So do they have some other things up their sleeve? And Glasgow Rocks, you know, going back to what Anthony Rowe was saying, we have to remember they had their anchor of their offense and defense pulled out of them. And that's roughly when their form absolutely dipped, was the loss of Ali Frazier. And, you know, Jordan Harris gave it away last week when we were talking about just how important he was. You could tell that he was the guy that they were looking for to kind of initiate the offense at times. And that really changed what their offense was looking like as well. So they're probably sitting there thinking maybe one got away, because I think they finished high because of other teams, not necessarily because of themselves. That sounds a little bit harsh, but I think that's the truth.
I don't think you'll have any Sheffield Sharks fans, Jay, but you keep it 100. I love it. Well, guys, we're going to slide into the Lasker look back. And where I want to go back to Saturday night, in particular to the last two plays of the Bristol Flyers Manchester Giants, which was a phenomenal game.
But even he has a sweat on right now. 8.4 remaining. Flyers possession. Crowd on their feet. Thomas Edwards has it. Inside it goes to Miller. Miller puts it in! Timeout, Lloyd Gardner, 6.2 seconds remaining. Flyers lead by 2 on aggregate. A huge shot from Mike Miller, all string. Lloyd Gardner drawing up a play. 6.2 seconds remaining. The SGS Arena has come unglued. It is deafening in here. However, there's still a lot of time. 6.2 seconds remaining. Armstrong will take the ball in probably one of the biggest possessions in the Manchester Giants' season to force overtime or break the hearts with a win. Armstrong all the way, blast by Delpez! They still have it, that's it! Bristol win! A huge win! Delpech with perhaps the biggest block of his career, and the Bristol Flyers advance.
And that is your Lasker look back. But no, what this game reminded me of was 2014, when you guys were up by 11 after that first leg. We come back to Newcastle, we go up by 12. You guys, Jose Calvo in particular, had a layup that he missed at the buzzer, and then we ended up advancing to the next round. Ro, how did the Manchester Giants lose this game?
Wow, I think they just met a really good and really well prepared Bristol team that played a high intensity, and they had a player that just came from nowhere called Mike Miller. I think they ran into a guy that has been an absolute stud. And I think with Mike Miller as well, especially when you look at that game in particular, there's always been something for me is, why do Bristol like this guy so much? If you look at some of the stuff we did at the beginning of the year with Sky Sports, who's the best player on the team? Nearly everyone said Mike Miller. Unfortunate, you know, circumstances happen. He gets injured. Antoine Johnson comes in to replace him. When he comes back, you know, Antoine Johnson's out, and they give Mike Miller again the green light again. You think to yourself, goodness me, this guy must be really good. And I believe he's really good because they've obviously seen something in practice that he's doing every single week to have the faith in this guy. First year player, he's not a returner. There's no extended loyalty from last year or the year before, and they've decided to be loyal to this you know, Mike Miller. And boy, did that loyalty pay itself in some and some in this quarterfinal fixture. He was absolutely incredible. And not only did he shoot the ball well, made big shots, but he did it in such an efficient manner, and he was everywhere. So I think for that reason, Manchester Giants too, they're not a great defensive outfit in my opinion. I think they've got individuals that cover the gaps, you know, like Putty, like extra strong Putty. Jamel Anderson, for instance, his on-ball defense and off-the-ball defense is good enough where it can mask a lot of errors as a team structure. And I think Bristol were able to just be that little bit more dogged, I think, in those latter stages of the game. And I just think that Manchester just didn't have enough, even though Mactavius McKnight, he bored out and he was their offensive spark. Yes. And their saviour. But I think Bristol just had a little bit more unity there. Marcus Evans, again, for me, still made a little bit too many rookie immature mistakes, but he had a really good game still, 20 points for him. But I just think maybe Manchester had rode their luck a little bit, and perhaps I think they should have won by a bigger margin in game one, and they didn't capitalize on that. And for that reason, they're now out.
Yeah, I totally agree. They left a lot of points there on the table. And Marcus Evans in particular, he's just not a point guard. He's a combo guard. He got the ball taken off of him twice. Two bad turnovers there crossing half court. But Jay, what's your take on this?
Yeah, I think if we look at Bristol Flyers, I genuinely think it could have gone one or two ways. And obviously, I'm one of those ones that said they were going to miss out in the playoffs because I just saw them knocking on the door too many times in games and not getting it done. And then all of a sudden, they just crashed through that door and they pushed into this playoff party and come and made a whole bunch of noise. And it doesn't surprise me. Of course, I was wishing they weren't going to win. I thought the Giants were going to get it done. But the Giants really haven't been that team that we're used to seeing since that finals loss. You know, they've just been really, really inconsistent ever since. And, you know, it just seems behind the scenes there's, you know, it's just very, very up and down. I've thought the same thing with Mike Miller when you were talking about, you know, Tone kind of cleared it up for me there. I was going to ask if he was, if I remembered rightly, that he was the injured one and that they passed on Antoine Johnson,
yes,
who is a really, really good player. And had the Sheffield Sharks had him, you know, it may have been a very different playoff picture. So, like you said, it's paid off in that one game. Hopefully he's got a little bit more left in him because it looks like he left it all in that one game to get him past. But yeah, I think there's great news for Coach Andreas. I think he does deserve it. He's had to rebuild this squad around, you know, a new look of veterans that I felt perhaps wouldn't be quite as talented. But you know, he gets something out of those Del Pesh boys, doesn't he? You know, like he passes one, goes off to Sheffield, he brings the other one in, and I'm like, wow, if I remember rightly going back, this dude didn't do anything, and all of a sudden he's looking pretty damn good as well. So, you know, it's something about those big Dale Press brothers that he likes, and so maybe the other one returns next year. That'd be good to see.
Yeah, we got to give Coach Andreas some credit because we've said it on here before, Jay. They, besides the Leicester Riders, they are the toughest team in the BBL. This team just fights, man. They have some grit about them, and it almost feels like poetic justice because if you look at their arena, it's small, it's tight, it almost looked like a high school gym, and they play on with that, you know. So I want to challenge you on the Manchester Giants point because you mentioned that they were playing, it started to fall apart after the cup final. I've been saying that they were playing pretty poorly leading up to that final, so it was just kind of covered up for the simple fact that they did make it to the big show. But Roe, did the Manchester Giants have a successful season or was it a failure?
There's two ways you look at this, right? Let's just look at the record books and historics. Yeah, they've been a team that missed the playoff year after year after year. So if you're a Manchester Giants fan, you would say this is a successful year because not only did your team comfortably make the playoffs, they got you to a final as well and got you a day out at the Birmingham Arena. So as a fan, that's a lovely progression for me. You know, missing out on the playoffs, making the playoffs, and have given yourself a good opportunity to win a piece of silverware. From a critical perspective and from an analysis perspective, I would say it's not a successful season. And unfortunately, there's not full transparency on this. I wish we could see a player budget. I wish we could see every single roster in the BBL's player's budget. That way we could just compare quite easily, you know, instead of speculating and guessing. I'm pretty confident that Manchester Giants would have had one of the bigger player budgets in the league this year. And for that reason, they've underachieved. I think they came in with big expectations as well at the start of the year, and there was a good excitement around it as well. I think it was a organic excitement, meaning that they've put together British talent as well. Services of Dan Clark, very exciting addition. And they've brought in their import players and merged their British players as well. But when you look at their roster, they were one of the deeper teams as well. And I don't think their depth was anywhere as effective as maybe a Leicester Riders. Nowhere to the same effect. So I'm looking at it like that from a basketball purist point of view. And I think they've underachieved. I think they've had these big dips. I think they've been not disciplined both ends of the floor as always. And I think upsettingly as well, I think as a former player, I look at some of the individuals on their team and it's not been a team of unity as well. When you've got rookies on there as well, you look to the veteran players a little bit more and you have to, whether you're happy or not, you have to just even fake it, but you have to show the rest of the guys how to display yourself, even in the most difficult of times. And I think that the Manchester Giants were really poor at that. And that's why they went on such a substantial landslide after the loss in that cup final. I think the wheels fell off and I think it was visibly a depression in their team chemistry or team organisation. So, and you just hear things as well that maybe perhaps the players aren't as happy off court. So for that reason, I don't think that the Manchester Giants organisation have got it right this year. And for that reason, they've underachieved, and therefore it's not been a successful season in my opinion as a basketball analyst.
Well, all you got to do, speaking of budget, is just look at Dan Clark. We know that he's getting his degree from Manchester University, but we know he didn't come for a pack of cookies, so we know he getting paid something. So I think that just proves your point right there. And Jay, you agree or disagree?
No, I think I completely agree. Like I said, I think that there's something. I don't know what it is, so it's not there for me to speculate, but there's just something in the culture and the organization that hasn't necessarily worked. I think they've got a really good coach, and apart from a phenomenal block, it was a really well ran play that gave Tyreek Armstrong a great chance to go and win a playoff game. So I think you've got a good up and coming coach there. The team, you have to look, starting with Dan Clark, and then we've added in Jamal Anderson, like the experience of a player like that as well. I think they should have done better, but like you said, for whatever reason, the wheels fell off, and that doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing. Like Ant said, the history of this franchise says that this should be a successful season for them, or it should be something that they should look at to build on. But they definitely got to go on a little bit of a deep dive to make sure that inconsistency doesn't creep in again.
I feel they had enough talent to do better there. You look at the players they've got there, Josh Steele, Jordan Whelan, David Oof, they've got players there that other BBL clubs would love to have. Jack Hudson, for instance, a backup British point guard. Again, a lot of other BBL clubs would love to have the luxury of having someone like that come off the bench. And they're import players as well. Let's not fool ourselves. Tyreek Armstrong and Mactavius McKnight. I know Mactavius McKnight left for several months, but those are two really good pros. And I think Artisan showed us enough as well in the latter stages of the season. And you kind of question yourself, well, why wasn't he doing it a little bit more? And, Lewis's numbers were very, very below par for an import player as well. So I think the thing is, well, you've got the coach's job or the team's job as well, is to get the best players out of the players, remember, as well. And I just felt like there was a lot of potential that was just left out on the floor. And I think Dan Clark's injuries, no one can, you know, you can't do anything about that. It's the way the basketball gods, you know, see it sometimes. But I just think there was just a lot of talent there that just wasn't anywhere close to reaching its potential.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that there's two things that stand out for me, and I agree with both of you guys. First of all, what happened to Josh Still? You know, all of a sudden, he just, for some reason, and it was before, I mentioned on the Sky Sports that after the concussion, he looked a little bit subdued, but in reality, he had been playing poorly before then. So, you know, what happened to him? And then the other point of it is this coaching aspect, and I really thought that Lloyd would have learned from the cup final that when you get to these playoff games, you get the finals, you have to slice those minutes. And for me, and I said this during the cup, when it comes to Tyreek Armstrong, you're 22 years old out of college. I'm letting him know before the game, hey, you better be ready to play 40 minutes. I ain't taking you out unless you get into foul trouble. And I felt like Saturday night he went a little bit too deep into that bench. And you know, having a roster like theirs or Lester Ryder's is a luxury, but sometimes it could be at a fault because it can break guys' rhythm. So I think it'll be a great learning curve for him moving forward, that when you get to these big showcase games, you don't have time for guys to try to figure it out and feel themselves in the game. You gotta roll with your roll dogs that you know that you can trust and believe and can get the job done. But it's going to be really interesting to see where this franchise goes next season, because we know they have a core, and I'd be interested to see how much of that core returns. But we move on, guys, to London Cheshire. And I said this on the telecast tonight when Nat asked me before the game. I said, oh, they got Dirk Williams back in the lineup. They are good. And so after the game tonight, I went away from my phone for an hour. I get to my phone, I see missed calls, I see a ton of messages, and I look at the score, and they are down by 30. Jay, you said you watched it, because I said I didn't even feel like watching any more basketball today. What the hell happened to the London Lions in the first half?
Oh, man, it was like the Wild Wild West. That's what it was. Cheshire just came out. I mean, the thing is, we interviewed Larry Austin Jr. and stuff like that, their players are afraid of nobody. And, you know, they came in, and Coach Ben Thomas, like, he's the same. I could just imagine him in the change rooms just saying, show no respect, go out there, go play. And I just don't think the Lions were ready for that type of game, like the way that they came out. Obviously, you know, I know Dirk's trying to work his way back in, but, you know, was nowhere near the player that we know that he is. So I think they just straight up punched London in the mouth, and it almost worked. You know, it almost did, but they just steadied their legs and got themselves back in the game, and in the second half kind of, you know, came right back at them, and, you know, got their guns out too. So it was a great game.
And speaking of guns, London Lions dodged a bullet. Can you imagine the conversation us three would be having if they lost that game and got knocked out of the first round? So, you know, those got that franchise is lucky. So we'll let them off the hook. But, and what actually changed in the second half? How did they get this thing turned around?
Well, I think it was a stern talking to at halftime. Halftime, 67 points they conceded, 67-38. It was unbelievable. And I was watching this. I was very lucky. I was chauffeured today by Dan Routledge, who's an excellent driver. Oh, so nice. I got to watch the whole game, and it was great. And I kept screaming at my phone because I couldn't believe what I was seeing. It was unbelievable. It was just shot after shot as well. And I think it goes back to what Jay was saying as well. It's that, I don't care, no fear attitude. That's so dangerous. That is so, so dangerous. And name on right, Larry Austin Jr. in particular, they had that no fear mentality. And I think it just spread among the team. It was contagious. Because you had Robbie Graham came off the bench. He had 11 early points. He was balling like he does it, you know, like it was a standard procedure for him, like he does it every week. And And I do think London were, they were shell-shocked. It wasn't a case of them just chilling. They were trying to shoot themselves back in the game, and they were trying to adjust, and they and just Phoenix just had them in a chokehold, and it was quite remarkable to see. And I got to the second quarter and thought, okay, here we go. It's about to turn, and it never did. It just kept going. It was like when someone was on the ground and Cheshire Phoenix just kept kicking. I'm like, stop the fight. And I think halftime came, and you saw the aggressiveness there of London certainly change. And Isaiah Reese as well started the game 0-for-8. So it was he obviously is a huge piece of their offensive weaponry. I think their leading scorer at halftime was Ryan Martin. He had 9, but other than that, they weren't getting anything really from anyone else. Julian Washburn was excellent. Second half, he was excellent, and I mean both ends of the floor. For me, he was a difference maker. He was awesome. He really was. And which I think just from there grows the confidence as well. With Reese, he goes 0-for-8. He doesn't care. He's still shooting like he's 8-for-8. And when he makes a couple of shots, then he was able to turn it around. Now there was a very if you check you guys check this out after the game on the BBL player, Coach Ben Thomas was interviewed, and visibly upset with officiating. I think disgusting was one of the words he used in his vocabulary. And Mike Kotcharobia got fouled out in the third quarter. There was a number of players in foul trouble as well that couldn't really play any extended minutes, and that hurt the rhythm of the Cheshire Phoenix. And Naimon Wright was probably the centerpiece. He was the only consistent figure that they had in there that was consistently producing. But Teddy Okorafor was in foul trouble. Levi Bradley had 4 fouls as well. So it was one of those ones where they couldn't get into any type of rhythm. Kerry got fouled out, and Austin Jr. got fouled out in the end. And the issue you had as well wasn't just the offensive production. A number of times Robbie Graham was isolated against Isaiah Reese, and Robbie Graham was isolated against Julian Washburn. And no disrespect to Robbie Graham, you'll put some of the better defenders on in the league, and they'll have trouble with those guys. And it was just layups for the London Lions. So there was a whole lot of issues that happened, and you could just see as well the crowd. You always talk about the sixth man and that energy. The energy just, you could feel it. I was watching it on a phone, and I could feel the energy just get sucked out of the Knicks arena, and that all played its part, and I think it's one of those two that they were the underdogs. So you go into that game down 16, and when you're in a position like that in the fourth, you think, oh god, here we go, reality's about to smack us in the face, and it had that feel about it, and London just grew in confidence. Kyler Kelly was an excellent rim protector. That was another difference in that second half. Kyler Kelly protected that rim like it was his own house that was getting invaded. So it was it was a different response, and I would say it was a very good response from London, because it would have been, I think, easy for them to throw in the white towel of all the struggles they've had this year. Sure. And all the vulnerabilities we've seen with them. I think they could have easily threw in the towel, and Cheshire Phoenix could have walked out of there with a semi final spot. That's for sure. Yeah.
Do you think Coach Thomas was justified in what he was saying, like in your eyes, in terms of the refereeing, or do you think it was just is what it were, what it is?
It's really hard to say, because again, I haven't, the cameras aren't fantastic. What I would say is tough. I would need a little bit of a closer look, but I think when you look at the guys though, Archerobia is not a guy that we often see getting technical fouls. So I look at that and think, that's odd. That's an outlier. He's quite mellow-natured. I often look at him and think, he's quite a level-keeled, mellow-natured individual. So there's a question mark there. And that's a big player, huge player for them, huge player. And he gets ejected off the foul and the technical. And then you've got Cole Carey had 5, Austin had 5, Bradley had 4. Archerobia had 5, so there's a lot of key guys there, and they're not deep. I don't know, Jay, is the answer to that question. I would have to look back, but I think there's enough there for me to be suspicious. But I'd have to see, because I know what it's like. You're an emotional response. You're interviewing a coach straight after a game. It's one of those, isn't it? It's tough.
I love it. What I will say before Drew takes over again is I will say that whoever made the decision to sneak Washburn back in, like, deserves a good pat on the back, right? He's like the BBL Undertaker. he just came straight back, you know.
Well, somebody saved their job by bringing him back in the fold. But I'll say this, because I'm gonna lean towards the referees, and you know, there's a lot of chatter. We see it every week in regards to our refs, and of course they could do a better job. And you know, have any of you guys ever reffed out there listening? It is a tough gig. It's not something that I would desire, but I would say this, because I have two examples. First of all, I can understand if Cheshire had a 30-point lead and they end up losing by 13 and they lost a tie by 2. But when you squander an 30-point lead, to me, in my opinion, and I haven't seen the game, that's not just about the refs. And then on another point is something that Teo had mentioned as well, because he tweeted something out on their season finale about how poor their season was, but he kind of leaned towards the ref as well. And I'm like, look, when you go 2-25, you can't be mentioning no refs, man. Like, I'm sorry, Teo, my guy, but I don't want to hear nothing about no refs. And just to let you know that I'm not biased, I even said it to our play-by-play guy, Jeff King, who mentioned something about the Plymouth refs after we lost, and I made sure that I tweeted and edited him, and I said, nope, I don't want to hear nothing about no refs when it comes to the Newcastle Eagles, because you had 27 plus 10, which 10 cup games, 37 plus one trophy game. You had 38 games to prove that you were better than your record, so I don't want to hear nothing about that. So, yeah, I got to lean on the refs when it comes to that. Like, if it's a one-point game, or, you know, there's other circumstances, but no.
I'd love to see Tone in the black and white pinstripes, though. He'd be like the Pierluigi Chiellini of the BBL, wouldn't he?
Dude, I just had a visual of him in his. He loves his Air Max in a black and white pair of Air Max with the black jeans, all crispy. Ironed up with the. I just had a nice little visual of you, my man.
you guys are silly. You're forgetting a massive knee brace I'd have to wear to get me up and down the court.
Awesome. Well, I mean, I'll just fill in on this one. When it comes to successful season of failure, I would like to believe that you guys are on the same page when it comes to the Cheshire Phoenix. Of course, it's a success. If you look at where they were in November, in particular, vividly, I remember those two Sky Sports games where they lost by a total of 70 points, and they were an embarrassment. And credit to Ben Thomas pulling the right strings of Larry Austin to get him in the fold. Season turned around, and you got a trophy. You got a trophy in a league with the Newcastle Eagles, the Leicester Riders, who have been dominant, and then the London Lions, the richest club in the team. So, you know, like we said on here a couple of weeks before, they were playing with house money for the rest of the year. So, in my opinion, it was a huge success for the Cheshire Phoenix, and let's hope they can keep Teddy, keep some of those guys, and build. But we move on to the last and final game, the Plymouth City Patriots away to the Leicester Riders. And our two Leicester Riders fans, I think our listeners out there know that Anthony Rowe and Daniel Routledge are some fans. I know they try to reel it in sometimes, but they said overcomes. They were getting a little bit worried in the first half when Plymouth got to a fast start. And I said, chill, fellas, it'll be okay. But in the third quarter, I think Plymouth actually took the lead and went up by 2. So, you know, they gave them a scare, but the Leicester Riders, Geno Crandell fouls out in 20 minutes, and not only did they win the tie, they actually won the game as well after being 15 down. Just something about this team, and keep their 10-year streak alive of the last time a Plymouth team beat the Leicester Riders. And I think some guy named Drew Lampard was part of that last team to beat the Leicester Riders. But Jay, how does the Leicester Riders keep getting it done?
I've fallen foul many times to that bloody record as well. So thanks for the reminder on that one. But yeah, I mean, look, in this game, like Plymouth City Patriots, they had absolutely zero to lose. You know, like they were just absolutely delighted to make the playoffs. They've been the story of the season and I think in history, to be honest. I don't think there's going to be anyone that can really genuinely turn a franchise around like that. And, you know, look, people get on Surrey, but you can't tell me that those guys are not trying, and they're not trying to fix the problem, and Creon's not there trying to fix the problem. So it's not easy. So for them to do that halfway through the season, obviously, who would have thought Rashad Hassan could roll the times back? You know, he had a tough time in Surrey, left kind of quickly, looked like perhaps that could have been the end of his career, comes in and just, you know, plays like the Hall of Famer that he is within the BBL. And then you pick up Antonio Williams, who just is the whole vibe of what they were trying to create. You know, it's not like you were adding a... It was almost like he was just literally made just to go in to that particular team. So, you know, they had nothing to lose coming into this game. And if I was Coach Rob, in fact, like, this would be two games that I wouldn't really want, because we're supposed to win it. We're supposed to win it comfortably. And, you know, I knew that Plymouth would make it tough. I think if you look at the interview there today, obviously Coach Rob was talking about that, you know, he was kind of surprised that they made a couple runs there that made him sweat a little bit and made him work a bit harder than maybe they thought they would need to. So, yeah, credit to Plymouth. And, you know, no surprises there that Riders are through. Obviously, just I'm kind of keen to get you guys' thoughts on the incident from the first game in terms of Coach Rob getting hit. And I was kind of thinking about it, and because of how accessible we are, and we've been players, like, and especially at the pavilions, we understand how accessible we are and the job that we're supposed to do. And we see how fired up fans get, especially the ones down in Plymouth. Like, they would make bona fide villains, especially like Newcastle coming in. I mean, crying out loud. We even had the Darth Vader music way back in the day just to kind of, you know, amp that up a little bit. Are you surprised something like this hasn't happened sooner, or are you just purely shocked that that's come into the sport at all?
I was shocked, in all honesty. I think you're right, Jay. We don't see anything like that in British basketball, you know, ever, thankfully. You know, you do see, I've seen videos of Europe and stuff, you know, chairs flying everywhere and flares getting shot onto the court. But I think in the UK, we're a lot more civilized in that in that arena. And essentially, I think some of it's too because it's our culture. It's not ingrained in our culture as much, where you've got these raving, you know, basketball mad fans. It's more of a family environment, I would say. But I think, I said this to my mum, who was at the game. You strip it back, you know, whenever a human being throws a pint or another object at another human being, it's just not right. It's not acceptable. So whether it's in a basketball arena or a football pitch or just in a pub, whatever, you know, whenever someone does that, that is not acceptable, and it cannot ever be tolerated. I just think for us, maybe this is exemplified because someone just threw a pint at a freaking future Hall of Fame, you know, PBL coach, which is, again, it's not acceptable. So, and I think it's very harsh as well. And I think we like to do this. We love to, as humans, I think we love to put blame, and we love to, us against them. I don't think it's the Plymouth Patriots fans base. You know, it's an individual there. You know, if this was a consistent behavior from the fans, then yes, we can tarnish all of them. They're inappropriate and they're not fit for the league. But this is an isolated incident, which I don't know. Is it a season ticket holder? I don't know. Is his first game, you know, first Patriots game this year? I don't know. So it's just, I think it's one of those situations where it's just not tolerated. And I think that what they have to do, I think Plymouth Patriots have to take responsibility at their venue for their team and impose the punishments alongside with whatever legal punishments there are from the individual who was arrested. So that's my thoughts on it. But yeah, I was shocked. We never see anything like this. Never.
Wow.
Yeah, I was absolutely shocked. And maybe I would be a little bit less shocked if the fan is sitting in the stands and he's just hype and it's a lot of emotion and he just throws it from the stands. And But the video that I saw, he ran down the aisle and targeted Coach. And I was like, nah, hell nah. Because if that happens on the street or in a pub, what happened? They throw in hands. So it's disgusting. It's totally unacceptable. And for me, I read something I believe you guys are as well, on the Plymouth City, Plymouth Raiders supporters page. And someone tried to almost like justify it, saying that Rob wasn't that bad. He was kind of overreacting. And I'm like, wait a minute. Like, it doesn't matter what type of reaction that Rob had. You don't throw nothing at another man. And so, yeah, it was absolutely disgusting. But if we're talking about the level of surprising, if I think it's going to happen in any season, it's this season. And we've been talking about all year of how the British Basketball League is moving in a different direction. And we got all this coverage and all this social media content, and you got a little bit of money behind the league. You get a coach get fired, or I don't want to use the word fired. We don't know exactly what happened with Vince, but he got dismissed or he left, whatever. It happened during the middle of the season. You got another coach in Newcastle who steps down before the season finishes. This is unprecedented in our league when it comes to those type of decisions or that's being made. So, you know, are we moving in that direction to where we see more of it? I absolutely hope not. But, yeah, totally unacceptable. But like you mentioned, you guys made a great point. You don't want to paint the Plymouth City Patriots fans under one mistake, because I was very surprised that it happened from that fan base, because they're some of the most amazing fans we have in our league. And so whoever that person was, they got to ban them for whatever, you know, 10 years, forever. I would be happy with that. So it definitely.
I'd say it's just a new fan. I hope it was a new fan. That's probably not used to Coach Rob. Like, we're so used to him now that, it almost doesn't even register in us anymore, like, in terms of how far he can be sometimes. And I don't know.
But even if it's a new fan, what would make you feel like to go in an environment you've never been in and let me throw something at a like, it's just ridiculous. But, I mean, in regards to the Plymouth City Patriots.
Bit of football.
Yeah, I mean, it's mind-boggling. But, I mean, we got to all agree, right, this was a successful season for Plymouth, right? I mean, where they were in December to now is absolutely amazing.
Incredible. You know, in seriousness, now we get ragged on because all three of us put them in the bottom, because we did that at the beginning of the year. That's how far away they were from the pack. There was no doubt in my mind with that roster, they would finish bottom. Now, if you give me a little insight to the recruitment strategy, then that would perhaps change my mind. But it's the way they've went about it as well, I think, has been... it's been very, very quite unique in that, you know, you can bring in talent, but there are, you know, you're still playing catch up because you're 3 or 4 months behind everyone else. But they just got guys in that bought into the system. They've recruited guys as well that have played in the league, i.e. Rashad Hassan. And I think there's something there with the guys that were losing before, didn't want that to continue, and was able to knit these guys together. And just, it was like they were able to speed up the chemistry process. And I think, well, with Paul James, he's been around for so long for a reason. You don't get lucky in these BBO jobs. These very few BBO jobs that many people want and many people don't get, there's a reason why he's got so many games under his belt, is because he finds a way to get it done. And he's found a way this year with this team that's been absolutely remarkable. It has. And I think... there's a lot of other talk as well around, oh, you know, the Plymouth Patriots, they were dirty, playing physical and stuff. And I'm like, so what? I would do the same thing. I'm about to play the Leicester Riders in the first round of the playoffs. I'm not as good as the Leicester Riders. Deep down, I know that. I'm still trying to win. And that's what this Plymouth Patriots team did. And I thought that I have so much respect for that. They tried to make the game as ugly, as physical as possible. I think they overstepped the mark to a degree. I haven't watched the game back yet, but I think their fearless approach to the series, to the matchup, helped them to an extent. I think they did very little wrong as well in game one, and they still lost by 15. I thought they did everything you should do. I think they tried to frustrate the Riders. They did that well. They played hard and they made shots. And they were still down by 15. I know exactly what happened today, and I wasn't even there. They're up in the second quarter, is it? They start talking smack. Wheeling gets peed off. You know, Gino gets mad. Rob gets mad. And I'm like, stop poking the damn bear. Stop it. How many times are we? In game one as well, let's remember, when before the incident, before the beer thrown incident, it was a 3-point game. you know, stop poking the damn bear. It's gonna bite you every single time. And Leicester Riders are just too good this year. And that's what I think happened today. In all honesty, I think the Plymouth Patriots did so well to get that position, and they just couldn't stop talking smack, or just got a little bit too big with their chests, and the Riders were able to do what the Riders do.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was amazing games that we had, and very entertaining. Like, you don't usually see deficits get overturned or get close to being overturned, maybe once every couple of years, but we had the potential of all four games, which is amazing. But, you know, Jay, who you got for player of the week?
It's time for the BBL Show Player of the Week.
Okay, Player of the Week. I've got two Cheshire Phoenix players and one Glasgow Rock. So I've gone with Larry Austin Jr., who had a 23 points, 8 rebounds and 10 assists for a 37 index. I then had JC Hillsman with a double-double, 19 points and 13 rebounds for a 24 index, as he takes them through to the next round. Finishing with our third player of the week, Bristol Flyers, Mike Miller, for 33 points, 5 rebounds, 4 steals, a 34 index. Very handily, Anthony's already telling me I'm getting it wrong, very handily helped by Mr. Tony Rowe. Thank you very much. So three players of the week, Larry Austin Jr., JC Hillsman, and Mike Miller.
As we wrap the show up, fellas, you know, we got two juicy semifinals on deck. And I just want to get your last thoughts as we get out of here. I'll start with mine. The Leicester Riders better be happy that they didn't face the Bristol Flyers. That is the only team that I guarantee you they didn't want to see for 80 minutes. Because if we look at all the results all over the season, they're only one of few teams to beat them. And then every game has come down to like 3 points, besides that game that Bristol defeated him on the trophy and they played him the next week and blew him out. But every game has been decided by 3 points or less. And so the Leicester Riders can breathe. I think they'll breeze through to the finals, where London-Bristol, I can't call it now. I mean, I need some time to get my thoughts together before I submit my weekly picks. But Ant, what's your final thoughts on this Final Four?
Yeah, I'm excited, and I think I'm a little bit, part of me is a little bit gutted that we're not seeing a Riders Bristol matchup, because I think that'll be a nice yes. two rounder. I think there'll be a lot of twists and turns in that one, I've got Riders obviously going to the final. I think Glasgow showed today an unbelievable performance, and surprisingly too, they were really good on the defensive end on a number of plays. Like, they just conceded 72 points, and they scored the ball really well. I don't think they're going to be able to score the ball that well against the Riders, though. There's a lot of points in transition. Riders are just too disciplined and too well structured for that. So you take away a lot of those easy baskets, and I think Glasgow just. Again, their rotations are a little bit thin.
Well, before I close it down, I will say, echo a little bit of what Anthony said. Like, for Glasgow to have any kind of chance, their big three has to be big for both legs. And, you know, with the way Leicester Riders are playing, I think it's just tough. And I think even if they do perform at the highest level, I think the Riders have to be 10% off in order to get that done. So I think the Riders will be there. In terms of London and Bristol, like Ant said, you know, yes, because of a lot of the good things that Bristol are doing, but also as well, like, who are this London Lions team? Like, I have no clue who they are. Like, sometimes they look far too good for the league. Sometimes they look like maybe the worst put together team for the finances. Like I said, we don't know exactly what it is, but we have to presume it's big, big money. But Ant's right, they could have just gone away today and they didn't. So it's just such a weird dynamic. Like, I really don't know what's going on with that culture. But you have to assume it's another week to get Dirk kind of up to speed. I don't see him having another game like that. You know, Reese back and healthy. And then, you know, a motivated Kelly and the Undertaker Washburn. So, I think it's going to be... I think it's going to be a tough matchup. You know, Bristol won't roll over, that's for sure. Like, it's not going to be a complete write-off and an easy win. But if London show up, then yeah, you'd like to think that the Lions get there and maybe they can salvage something from this season. But I'll leave that there for sure.
Yeah, well, you know, guys, we will be here to cover it like always. Oh no, Jay, we gotta go on a signature, Jay. You let me out. I don't wanna take your shine.
I gotta let you out. Well, yeah, let's start with a very big thank you to Mr. Rowe. He's been covering basketball all day, man. But still finds time for the show. So we always appreciate you, brother. Like, we had to kind of see in the playoffs like this. I agree with you. Look, right now, you know, I've got no chips in the playoffs here, so I'm just able to sit back and enjoy and just watch some great basketball. Like I said, since Christmas, this league is really, really amped up. I said before Christmas I was a little bit disappointed. Now I am loving it, which is great to see. So thank you again, Mr. Rowe. Drew, lead us out.
We got action coming at you Saturday and Sunday on Sky Sports coverage, so make sure you guys are locked into that. But Jay and I will be back here in this, I don't know if we'll be here Sunday. We got to see what the schedule is, but we'll make it happen like we always do. We'll see you guys same place, same time here on the show.
Thanks for listening to the BBL Show. The BBL Show is a 21 Media original podcast produced by Corey Mallory with your hosts, Jay Marriott and Drew Lasker. Keep up to date with the show by following the BBL on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram, where you can find details on future episodes, events, and fan interaction. Until next time.